I welcome all of you at this panel. I'm glad that you all came, even though it is the second last slot of this conference, I guess, and it's again a panel discussion. In this panel, we want to discuss about platform cooperativism and free software as two movements which are aiming at a transformation of the digital realm. Though both movements seem to share, at least in parts, similar transformative goals, which we will explore in detail shortly. Our observation is that in practice, there are only few examples of organizations combining both approaches. Within this panel, we would like to talk about possible reasons for that. So do both movements really aim at similar transformation? Or are there maybe even contradictions between them? And how can both approaches help each other in fulfilling their goals? So those and other questions we want to discuss today with our guests. We will start with a discussion on the panel only, and afterwards there will be time left for questions from the audience. So if you have any questions, keep them in mind or write it down for the last part. Before we want to start the discussion, I want to point out that there's obviously some gender imbalance on our panel. We as the organization team, so us, are aware of that and find that a bit problematic. And we would have liked to have a bit more diverse representation of the field. Nevertheless, I'm very glad about our speakers, and thank you very much for coming. And I'm looking forward for an interesting discussion with you.
Yes, hello, also from my side. My name is Jonas Penzin. Me and my colleague Clara, we work at the Institute for Ecological Economy Research. And before we get into the discussion, I briefly want to introduce to you the three speakers who have gladly decided to join us today. On my very left is Felix Weth, who is the founder of Fairmondo, which is an online marketplace, an online cooperative, which functions in a similar fashion to Amazon and eBay. But the biggest difference is they're entirely owned by their users. And during his studies, he has focused a lot on democracy research and questions of anti-corruption. And this academic interest, coupled with the practical experience at the German Corporation for International Cooperation and at the Transparency International Foundation, has informed the idea of Fairmondo. So the idea, as he claims it to be, it's to build a corruption-resistant company that helps transforming our economy from the bottom up. And today, Felix focuses primarily on the internationalization of this project. So thanks a lot to you for being here, Felix. On my left, we have Alexandre Segura, who has been working as a web developer for more than 10 years now. And he hasn't studied computer science, but he says that he's always loved computers, especially because he used them to produce music. And he's self-taught. He always learned by doing things, just by doing them for himself. And he has described to us that the Nuit Debout movement, so he's from Paris, France, the Nuit Debout movement, which started in France in 2016, and which was then followed by protests against the labor law reform that were proposed by then-president François Hollande, it was a pivotal moment in his life. Because before, he was always sympathetic towards leftist and political ideas, but he was never an activist himself. But Nuit Debout changed this. He got in contact with a lot of people that actively wanted to change the world. And without Nuit Debout, he says, Co-op Cycle, which is what he will present to us today, a cooperative also, wouldn't have existed. So we're very curious to find out how exactly Co-op Cycle helps making the world a better place. And last but not least, to my right, we have Silvan. Silvan is a computer linguist who has studied in Potsdam, and he is a volunteer for the FSFE, the Free Software Foundation Europe, for 6 years now, since 2012, and he is active for them locally in Berlin as well as German-wide, and he is a software developer as a profession and a free software advocate in his free time. So we're very much looking forward to what he does in his free time. Thanks to all three of you again, and we're looking forward to a very interesting discussion. Welcome also to the people who've joined a little bit later. So my first question, and I would like to extend this question to all of you one after another, is Clara has outlined these two strategies in the beginning. So kind of cooperativism on the one hand and free software on the other. And the first very broad question that I would first like to give to you, Felix, is which of these strategies does Fairmondo actually use and why?
Okay. Yeah, thanks for being here. Thanks for inviting me, and thanks for being here. So Fermondo obviously is a platform cooperative. That's our main characteristic. That's what we started off with, of creating an online marketplace that is owned by its users and by its employees and basically all affected stakeholders. But then during the founding phase of Fermondo, we also had a lot of developers or some developers joining our team, and they proposed to create our own software and to do it open source or as a free software. And that was a bit of a discussion, but after I was quickly convinced, I had no idea about open source before, but my first question was like, isn't this dangerous? Aren't we opening up to risks of someone hacking our software, knowing the code and so on? And they basically said, no, it's the other way around, it's going to be more secure. So, that's one of the reasons why we chose it, but during the time of developing Fermondo and as a business and as a project, we realized that there are a lot of advantages about open source, and by now I see myself as a little free software activist too, just recommending this to many people and also saying that we need more free software as a strategy for recapturing the internet as a democratic space for people to get active and to own themselves.
Thanks. So on this side, there is a connection already between free software and platform cooperativism. How is it for you, Alex? How does Co-op Cycle deal with these two strategies? Do you address both of them or just one of them?
Yes, we use both of them, or two, because Co-op Cycle is trying to bring an alternative to like you towards Amazon. It's trying to build an alternative towards food delivery platforms employing gig economy workers, so like Deliveroo or Foodora, Uber Eats. I don't really like to say their name, but that's more understandable sometimes. So the project started as a pure technology project, because it started as a side project that I started myself. It was not really with no real plan at the beginning. So it was not really serious. It was put on GitHub almost immediately when it started. So it started first as a, I don't know, open source free software project, and then the cooperative idea came maybe a little bit later, and it came with as a solution to replace gig economy work. So because the big platform, they are of the gig economy, they are using contractors, so which have no social security, no rights as workers. They are just obeying to some kind of algorithm, and so the cooperative strategy is on our project is used as a complete opposite side of gig economy work and self-employment. So we use both strategies, I would say, and even of course in the, because for me free software open source is also a way to organize communities, to organize non-hierarchical structures of work where everybody is on the same level. There is no boss. Even in open source and free software community, that's not maybe the case for all open source community. Like maybe Linux is a little bit pyramidal structure, but I think also free software is so both strategies are feeding each other, I think.
So we've heard here on the left that both of them are very much interested in the discussion around free software. Both of them are also interested in the question of cooperativism. Now, what do you and the FSFE think about this? And maybe a bit more controversial, do you think they're right when they're saying that they are, to a certain extent, also free software activists?
Well, I don't know if they are free software activists or not. I hope they are, but I can't assess that. But when thinking about what position to take on this panel here from a free software point of view, I figured that there are basically two options. I have a choice to make between two options. One is a rather easy way of focusing on free software as a tool, as a means, and there's an that would be the easy, rather cowardice way of saying, okay, here's a tool that you are free to use and you can make a choice to use it or not, and that takes me out of the equation because the choice is up to you and I can happily hack away my free software and not decide anything. And the other way that I could choose to take a position on is to focus on free software not as a tool, as a means, but rather on the free software movement and the ends or the social goals that we are trying to achieve by advocating or even producing free software. And that's a more difficult and a little more courageous way, because here I have to say what goals do we have by producing free software. And again, I think I have an offer to make, or the free software community has an offer to make. There's one, the freedom that we are trying to achieve by using free software, the freedom to use, to study, to share, and to improve your software. And I think the other aspect that I would like to focus on there, probably there are many more, but the other aspect is self-determination, right? Self-determination in terms of how do we control our software that we use in everyday life, and how do we control the devices that we use every day, and how do we prevent them, the devices and the software, to control us? And that's an interesting discussion, I think, that we're trying to make. So I will try and choose the more complex and complicated way of focusing on the ends. And I hope that everyone who doesn't agree on the ends that I'm proposing here will understand that the free software movement is a very heterogeneous movement.
Yeah, thank you very much for outlining those goals and ends. Now I would like to ask you, as platform cooperativist founders or members, do you see any similarities between those goals and ends Sylvain just outlined and the goals of the platform cooperativism movement or your cooperative specifically?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, of course, there are some similar goals, and I think some major goals that we all probably would kind of sign up to. Democracy, freedom, not being controlled by our own devices, not being controlled maybe by some large corporations and their specific targets. Then when it comes down to all-day practice and to what we actually do, I think there's some challenges of aligning our strategies and of working on common goals. My impression so far is we've been kind of working side by side. There's not so much inter-cooperation. Mm-hmm. We did try to reach out a little bit. We even were in contact with the Free and Libre Software Foundation in Europe. Is it that? And we found very open, friendly, nice people being in touch with us. We even had some people voluntarily getting active in the Framondo community. Just to say, Framondo is a business, but at the same time, we've been driven by a lot of contributions by volunteers, and it's part of the strategy. We have a point system where you gather so-called fair founding points, which are basically have this are kind of shares that you earn by by working, by contributing work, so some kind of sweat equity, so-called. And in this, it actually created a little bit of tensions in our little team at the beginning, because those people who are very much advocating free software were advocating it for it at every stage, everything that we used. So we started using Linux computers, or installing Linux on our computers. We started using free software for basically everything internally. And at some point, I realized that we spend more time kind of adapting solutions, in particular for project management and team coordination. We spend a lot of time working on that tool, and at some point I realized that even those members of our team who were actually working on our core marketplace software started working on our tools for project management. And so basically we had to decide, no, we're going to use proprietary software for the moment, because we don't have the capacities to contribute to this open source tools. And this again frustrated some other members who came from this open source or free software movement.
Do you have similar experiences in France?
Yes, I'm really happy that you distinguish between the two approaches that you could have, and because I suppose everybody here knows the difference between free software and open source, and, because having the source code open is something, but in my opinion, well, not in my opinion, in the opinion of Richard Stallman, free software is open source with a purpose. So yes, a purpose to change society, while open source is just a methodology of driving software development. So that changes everything. So this is why even we will discuss it later, even if our licensing model may not be really free software, I think we embrace really more the principles of free software. And about platform corporativism, I don't know when Fairmondo was created, because I don't know if it was created before the term of platform corporativism was popularized by Trevor Scholz and Nathan Schneider, but at the beginning, in any case, ourselves, we didn't know anything about platform corporativism. We realized later that we were in this movement, actually. So, and I think platform corporativism, it's an ugly word. I hope we will find some other word one day, because in French it's quite impossible to pronounce. And I think it's a reaction to the so-called collaborative platforms that emerged, like I think 5 or 6 years ago, and that had a lot of promises and that maybe at the beginning that were a little bit like the principles of free software. So Airbnb, Uber, and all of that, they had lots of promises of self-organization of the people by themselves to reinvent the way work is working. But in the end, they ended up being like a false promise, because more and more they are behaving like big corporations, in my opinion, platform corporativism is maybe a reaction to this, to bring us back the promise of the collaborative economy. I don't know the history of free software completely, but free software was also a reaction to the same kind of things, like big corporation like IBM wanting to make a proprietary software. So I think yes, it's it is in the same idea because it's a kind of social movement too. So.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing those experiences. So for now, I think we've mostly focused on the user perspective on free software, where free software obviously offers many advantages. So those four freedoms we have, or also as a cooperative, and how far you use free software. I would like to shift the perspective now a bit to the producers or workers' perspective, which seems to be a bit more, maybe, I don't know, controversial. And in the GNU Manifesto, Richard Stallman reacts to some popular objections against free software principles. And one of those objections lies in the question whether programmers will starve if they put their code under a free software license, and if it wouldn't be unfair if they won't get rewarded for their work. So to react on this objection, Stallman argues that restricting copyright is not the only way of making money from producing software, though it might become less profitable when they put it under a free license. I would like to know, Silvan, in how far is free software based on unpaid or low-paid work, and which positions are there within the FSFE about this? So how is the debate going, and what's your point of view?
Well, that's always a controversial discussion, of course, and I remember that with one of our frequent local meetings in Berlin that happened every 2 weeks, we once had the discussion topic of how to make money with free software, and that was one of the best visited meeting, because everyone was like interested in, okay, what strategies are there to make money from free software. I can only agree with Richard Stallman, of course. By restricting the use of your software, you can easily utilize the copyright and profit from selling the product of your work. I think what lies at the bottom of free software producers is actually the service. It's not producing something that you can sell off the shelf, but it's rather like I am a programmer for my company, and as I program my software, I get paid for what I do, and I don't get shares in every click that some of the users click when they use the software that I programmed, because by then I'm already working on the next project, which I'm being paid for. So focusing on the service rather than the product is one important thing. And most software companies that make money from free software will argue that they try to get service contracts or support contracts with companies that use the free software, because there's always work to do. As you say, there's administrative work, there's config work. Some people used to say Linux is only free if your time is worthless. But that focuses on the price of the software, right? And in English, there is this ambiguity of meanings, free as in free beer with no price, or free as in freedom. And no matter how much effort you have to put into the configuration or the administration of your free software, how much money you have to spend to use the free software as you wish, it always will stay free as in freedom.
Thank you very much for clarifying this. So one strategy of still making money is to make money out of like services around software. I would also like to know, Felix, you as a cooperative, I mean, somehow you also produce software in the sense that there's a code which makes Fermondo run. And I would like to know, and how far does that matter to Fermondo right now, and especially in how far did it matter at the process of founding the cooperative? So was this an important issue for you? Who's going to write this code? Was this a financial problem, or was it more like other problems which were more dominant?
Okay. Yeah. Well, in short, developing an open source marketplace solution is an extremely complicated thing, very, very expensive to do. In terms of software development, you just need a lot of developer hours, so said. And So it's basically the bottleneck that almost broke our own neck. We've been running through major crises in terms of continuing to stay in business with our cooperative because we couldn't provide a proper product to our customers. We did have a lot of demand. We had a lot of sellers coming over from Amazon, from eBay, saying, great, finally an alternative marketplace that is ambitious enough to say we want to challenge those people. We never had a shortage of actually sellers, and not just sustainable, ecologically minded sellers, but really just small producers, small sellers of any kind coming over and saying, okay, we're interested. But providing a proper product is another thing. And software development is just a very, it's basically bottomless in terms of how much you can invest into this. And my view on the whole question of how can you actually make money by creating a free product, like our source code is free, it's on GitHub, others could use it. So far, nobody's really using it, I must say, just because it's too complicated to set up your own installation of it. Well, it's at least, we have a Farmondo branch or a second Farmondo cooperative set up in the UK since 2 years, and they basically didn't use our software so far because they didn't have the developer capacities to adapt our software for them. And so the question if you can get paid by providing this is a core thing, and I think it's a problem, a general structural problem of how services are provided in the internet, in the online business in particular. I mean, we are an online platform, an online company, and customers and users are kind of expecting to get every service for free. So a marketplace has the advantage that sellers are used to pay a little fee, so at least we can make money through our core business model and then use that money for developing software and paying developers. but I think we need an internet that is basically based on more transparent business models where we don't have this kind of fake free offers where you think, okay, I can use Google Maps and other Google products, for example, for free, and you still pay with your data and you pay by clicking on their advertisements. So we need a new structure there, I think. And maybe we can contribute to this. And yeah, okay, I can leave it. But
well, what I find interesting in your case is that you have never started your business or your company with the goal of selling software, right? So you are not a software company. You just decided to create your own tools, create your own software, and I'm very happy about it. Decided to share that software with others, even though 10 years later, or I don't know how many, 5 years later, it turns out that no one else is using it. So one could argue, of course, you could just as well have kept it to yourself if no one's using it anyway. But then again, if we strive to create a more open, more transparent internet, and if we even want to enable other cooperatives, like the one you mentioned in the UK, or others that may open up in Brazil or Thailand or whatever, then just the your offer of here's something, not even if not only if you use exactly that, but here's something that you can look at, that you can study, that you can learn from, and maybe there's something inside that we haven't even noticed that might be of help for you. So yes, personally, I see some company creates their own software and does not intend to sell it for money, I don't see why not every company should open up their code under a free license.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask you anyway.
I just maybe ask you a question, maybe, I don't know.
My question was actually that I think this idea of putting the code under a free, or at least somehow not proprietary license, is a basic idea of co-op cycle, and I would like to know about your experiences with the usage of your code by other cooperatives.
Maybe I don't really remember, but maybe one of the main reasons we created an free open source software is because of the nature of the kind of platforms we are trying to make an alternative to. It's because in the gig economy platforms, like for delivering food, one of the masters is the algorithm, and nobody knows how the algorithm works. Nobody knows why is some gig attributed to some workers or not. So making the algorithm, which is the new boss today, today the algorithm is deciding if you have, for example, if you have 4 stars on Uber, you don't get assigned any gig and you are not earning money. Because if you have not given the small bottle of water to the customer, he gives you 4 stars and then you don't get assigned any work anymore. So you have to be like a majordom, like you have to be happy every day, you have to be like this for the customer, etc. And so the algorithms are the new bosses, and now your boss is in your pocket, in your smartphone, on the gig economy platform. So nobody knows how it works. So one of the main reasons why, actually, we don't have any algorithm anymore. We started making one really simple algorithm, but we completely changed the software afterwards. But one of the main reasons is that if the algorithm is, you can read, if you are able to read code, of course, if you are able to understand how the algorithm works, there is something that is more open, at least. But also, I would like to emphasize about the fact that will programmers starve? For example, in Linux, 8% of the contributions are actually made by volunteers. All the other contributions are made by people paid to work for Intel, for IBM, for Red Hat, for example. So, no. Programmers are not going to starve at all. Or maybe they are going to starve one day, because right now we see the rise of coding schools. They want people to learn programming at the age of 5, and all of that. That sounds cool, but actually the main goal behind this is to lower the wages for the programmers, because the programmers, they are still costing a lot of money to companies. In the United States, when you go out from the school, you can get paid like $100,000 a year, even as a junior programmer. And all of these big companies, they want to pay the developers less. So maybe the coding tools are going to lower the wages for developers. But we really started. Open source we really started the software open source in a maybe pragmatic way, or just a maybe provocative way. But now I really don't think programmers will starve. No problem.
Maybe I can jump in right there. I mean, I think you very beautifully described before in your statement before that there are a lot of similarities in how these movements have started, both of them, the cooperativism movement, also the free software movement. And I think a big question that I always ask myself is that there's also always, or that there's similar dangers in both movements of how they could be co-opted. I mean, again, you kind of addressed this a little bit in your last statement, where you said that actually a lot of them are employed by IBM. And for you, Sylvan, just a question. As I understand it, actually most of the free software, most programs that work on it, they're actually employed by the big tech companies, by Google, by Facebook, by Amazon, by IBM. And why is that the case? What is actually the interest of these big companies in pushing for the development of free software? What is going on there?
Well, I think they're just using, they're sharing the same tool, right? So one big example for me, apart from the Linux kernel, of course, was always a software a development platform, like the program you use to program software software programs. And of course, there are a lot of companies who have demand for such a piece of software and a development environment, right? And then, I mean, in earlier days, maybe they would have put up a consortium or something and decided to work together so that they can all use the same tool. Nowadays, with the means of free software, they can just put the repository online, and then people are free to contribute or to just take it and use it for themselves. So why are so many people are actually being paid? It's an interesting question, right? First, we were worried that developers may starve. Now we ask ourselves, what makes these companies actually pay developers to produce free software? And I think the main answer is just that they want to use software as a tool, and in a market society, there's nothing to say against the fact that we are all using the same tools. I mean, carpenters, they have all used the same tools, and if they have had a machine to copy their tools, why would they have used it? With software, we can do that easily, and it doesn't give them a negative impact on their business to share the software that they're using.
Okay. I mean, we've had a similar debate, kind of, so I want to address or kind of bring a similar question to the cooperative field, because there, this question of co-optation has also been raised a lot, especially in Germany in the last month, because Trevor Scholz, I think you've mentioned him before a couple of minutes ago, who's kind of seen as one of the figureheads of this cooperativism movement. He's written a lot of books, just for those of you who don't know him, and Google has actually given him a $1 million grant, I think in May of this year, in order to develop I think they call it a platform cooperative development kit or tool or something. And my question to you is that co-optation? Is there a danger actually of this movement, which had this kind of emancipatory strategy in the beginning, supposedly, to be co-opted by these big tech giants? Why are they interested in that? Why does Google give $1 million to Trevor Scholz? What's going on? To you first, Felix.
Well, first, Trevor is a great and very committed guy, and I'm absolutely sure that he is not co-opted and not co-optable as a person, as a personality. He put so much effort into spreading this concept, and I really appreciate this. And I think the Google grant was an opportunity. He's been reaching out to a lot of institutions, a lot of potential partners. That's also one of his strengths, that he has a good network and is a good networker. So first, at first view, I'd say, okay, great, if they contribute some money, and you have to see that they do give a grant, but it's also connected to some conditions. Those co-ops that can be supported with this, or, well, funded with this grant, are mostly co-ops that work in the health business or elderly care business, so nothing that could affect the core business model of Google. Yeah, that's the one point. I think co-optation is a core danger for any ambitious, ethically motivated business or organization. It's happening so much, and in particular, if you grow to a scale where you get relevant, where people think, okay, now you're making a turnover where you can, or revenues where you can actually make some profits with it. You're very much in danger of being taken over or pushed into a direction that you maybe didn't intend in the beginning. That's why I think we need throughout platform co-ops with a dedicated model that prevents this kind of what I called an uncorruptible business. That's why we developed this, what we called a cooperative 2.0 model, because the cooperative model, in my view, is also, first of all, outdated, and second, not perfectly preventing this kind of co-optation.
What does it do, the cooperative 2.0? What's the difference to cooperative 1.0?
So
why
very
is it less corruptible?
So first of all, it's about who can be your member and how can you be a member. So I think co-ops, platform co-ops and any progressive co-op should be a multi-stakeholder co-op where employees can be members, users can be members, but other affected people that are affected by your business and your activities should also be able to become member and hold you to account. You should clearly define the principles of your work and not just having a nice mission statement, but really concrete, specific principles. For example, we have the principle that we have to publish all knowledge produced by our cooperative under a kind of GPL license, not just code, but also other knowledge. And I think these kind of principles, you need to put them down and then be able to be held to account. And from this requires also transparency, so you also need to have transparency measures. You can, you know, explain a lot of things that you're gonna do, and then nobody really knows what you're doing. So these are core issues about Corp 2.0.
What do you say to that? First of all, I mean, we want to open up the floor to all of you out there. Just one last question to also give you the possibility to respond, but maybe about this co-optation question, but also how did you license your code as Co-op Cycle, and why? What measures did you choose? Maybe if you could answer these two questions, and then afterwards we'd open up to all of you.
First of all, maybe ironically, the big corporations have decided to own the means of production, which are, for example, Microsoft buying GitHub, because nowadays most of the code is produced on GitHub. So they say, okay, those are the means of production of what we are using, let's buy it. And also IBM has bought Red Hat recently. So while this may be quite frightening because of the concentration into the hands of always the same big corporations having big money and all of that, normally it should stay more or less like before. Yes, Linux, while it is supported mainly by big companies, it's still something that is free. But it may be influenced a little bit by the interests of the big company, which are of course improving the software. Also, for example, Facebook has made React, which is a wonderful framework. So also they are it's benefiting the community, because React allows to build wonderful websites. We are using it to make our native app, so I couldn't say that they are bad, but it's a complicated situation because we live in a capitalist world, and so you have to, it was about the same issue about programmers starving, you need to have money to live. So if you don't have money, if you are not earning money, you need to have money on the bank, I don't know, but you need money to buy food, to rent an apartment, so you need money. So and money has no, I don't know if you say that in English, money has no, you don't care where money comes from, but it depends on if the people giving you the money can influence what you do. And normally, like you said, one of the difference between us and maybe GitHub and Red Hat is that cooperatives cannot be acquired. We cannot buy, because GitHub is a standard company. It's a company seeking profit. It's a company, it's not driven by any ideal. It's just a capitalist company. And Red Hat is also a company like this. So maybe one of the differences is that with cooperatives, at least no big corporation can buy it. But yes, also as a last remark, yes, maybe, but of course cooperative is not the last solution, because for example in Italy, cooperatives have a very bad image, because basically people are creating cooperatives just to benefit from tax advantages. And so I've been in Italy, and when you say cooperative to the young people, they say, oh no, come on, I don't want that. And all of that. And yeah, to end up with our licensing model. So since the beginning, yes, it was maybe a joke at the beginning. Now it's part of our ideology, I would say. In the beginning, when the project was really small, I chose a license, which is the peer production license, which was written by a German activist from a telecommunisten group, which, and this license basically it says that you are you have almost all the four liberties except the one to use the software in any way you want. So this license, it says that to use the software you need to be a worker-owned company. You need to implement democracy in the company, and you need to split the profits between all the workers. So it's just a way to say you need to be a cooperative to run the software. So when I saw this license, which is named like copy, it's not copy left, it's copy far left. So I really liked it because of the name. So, and but really at the beginning it was not really serious, it was just to because I was the only one following myself on GitHub, so that was not now it's part of what we are encoding our ideology in the license. Because for example, Linus Torvalds one day said in 2002 he said ideology sucks. And I don't agree with him. So he said the world will be a better place with less ideology and more programming for fun. But that's like saying I'm neither left nor right. When people say that, they are right wing. So and for example, one last example. Last summer, and I think I'm not really a specialist of all of this, but I think this debate has been there in the free software open source community. Is like saying, who are the bad guys? Can't we say who are the bad guys? The bad guys, they are the ones spying on us, they are the ones making shit with the refugees and all of that. For example, last summer, people from the Lerna project, which is a tool to manage JavaScript mono repo, they added a clause to their license saying that you can't use our software if you are working with the immigration agency. So if you are Palantir, Microsoft, IBM, you cannot use our software. And it was the debate was around that. So we do more or less the same thing. We really want to say, yes, the bad guys are the people living only for profit and etc. And they should make cooperative. So
thank you very much.
You wanted to jump in, I felt like 4 minutes ago. there was a lot of content added afterwards, but please address these questions, and afterwards we'll open it up.
Yeah, right. I can answer to that very, very briefly, because I appreciate the way you said what you just did. But from the point of view of these two paths that I offered in the beginning, I must say, by choosing your path of restricting the use of the software, you're leaving the path of freedom. So what your license does is not offering free software, and so we are separating.
So now we have a clear division, which is always good to trigger some debate. So let's open it up to all of you. Zantje is going to collect the questions. We would like to take three questions at a time, and then whoever wants to address them first can address them first. So please, hands up. If you have something to say, please make it brief and in question form. Thanks a lot. Yeah, here, down. There's one down here. There's another one here in the middle, and another one over there. So one, two. And a third one? Yeah, we would especially like to have especially here, a gender balance at least.
Yeah, if we don't please have compensate. It on the,
so, okay, let's have these two questions first, and then we will do a second round. If no one's, don't be shy. Okay, let's go.
So first of all, thanks. I was just curious in terms of cooperatives and stakeholders which have, I would say, competing interests. How do you deal with conflict? How do you deal with decision making, with finding consensus and that sort of thing?
Next one.
Down here, there's the second one here.
Okay, first of all, thank you very much. That was very interesting. One thing I would like to add, I was missing two points maybe on how to get paid for the work for free software. One answer is don't, yeah, because what you get is respect. That's like an ultimate currency, and you can do a lot more things with that than with the little money you will get for the little bit of coding. Also, if you code open source, yeah, you have an incredible code base these days. Compare that to 10 years ago with proprietary software, it was would be unfinanceable, the amount of code you can use now. But my question is, how does data ownership fit into this? Because you haven't talked about that. There used to be a time where we owned the software and we owned the data, and now we own neither. Yeah. So that's my question.
Anyone wants to go first? From those on the panel? So Felix, you want to go? Yeah, sure, of course.
Well, on that first question, governance is a specific issue, and to me, cooperative doesn't define your governance model. You do have accountability to your stakeholders in our model, for example, but they don't rule our all-day business. We have a team that has taken its own decisions, and our cooperative members can basically make sure that we follow up the principles that we put there. We do have a general assembly that then can discuss and also influence general strategic decisions, but not all day business. So it's not about having like balancing all the stakeholders all the time. I think that actually doesn't make sense to do it in all day business. But then for general questions like, for example, the pricing on the platform, we need the input from the different groups. This is a specific thing. I just wanted to also mention, like, since the question of data ownership and data was mentioned, data protection maybe also, for me, it's one of the core reasons why we need this platform co-op movement and why we also need the free software movement and why we need to work together. Right now, we are in a very dangerous situation and in a very pressing situation of recapturing the internet and all this technology that's out there. I mean, this is what this conference is about. If we don't do it, we will follow the path of being manipulated into consuming more by using our data. And I don't think that any classical corporate model is useful for creating well-designed data protection. I think we need to create this kind of democratic control, not just through abstract governments, but within the businesses.
Thanks. Anybody else wants to jump in on these two questions?
Well, yeah, I just think that goal probably doesn't work without free software, right? So the question of data ownership, of course, goes to the businesses who own the data or who have the data. But if you want to be transparent, you just cannot have some piece of software that's doing with your data whatever you cannot control it.
So I think we can do maybe one or two last questions. Are there any further questions from the audience? Let's start here, there, and there.
So I was talking earlier about the restriction of use and what the potential consequences of that could be. And one of the ideas that came to mind was that we restrict freedoms for corporations in many ways that we don't restrict for people. And I'm wondering if you would, so it sounds like some of the restrictions that are being proposed are restrictions for sort of organizations, not necessarily for individual users, and if you just wanted to comment on that.
Wait, second question down here somewhere. Can you, over there.
Yes, I am Jan Peter from Host Sharing Co-op, and we offering web hosting on our own service and our own infrastructure since 18 years, and I just wanted to hear what do you think about owning not only your company but only having an infrastructure of co-ops owning service and infrastructure.
Vitalik Buterin, the founder of the Ethereum Foundation, argues that that free software can only be a public good if the developer community is diverse. How can we achieve that the developer community of free software gets more non-white and non-male?
Okay, three very interesting questions. I will take you first if you want to address them. Okay, yeah, go ahead, and then afterwards.
Yes, about having a common infrastructure. I think this is one of the things we are trying to do because our software is open source, maybe. In the platform economy, one of the and maybe it's also related with data. In the platform economy, the software, the lines of code are not the problem. The lines of code are just useless if they don't run on the server. So and this is what the big platforms have achieved. It's making services that are running pretty well on the internet. For example, in France, there is a non-profit organization named Framasoft, which brings, which tries to de-Googleize, like they say. So they are basically they are putting open source alternatives to what Google is doing in their servers and give it Git for free. So it's infrastructure is really a big issue, and it also relates to big corps because. Like I think more than half of the servers in the internet are run by Amazon, which means that on your data, even if you are running an ethical company, your data is on the servers, is physically on the servers of Amazon. So they could do what they want with it. And yes, maybe there is a I'm not a specialist of this subject because also data is a matter of infrastructure. You have to have lots of storage to store it, etc. And there was an article a few days ago, I think, about nationalizing Amazon. But I don't think nationalizing Amazon is a good idea because if the data is owned by the state, there is an issue too. So maybe cooperatives and publicly owned by the people stuff is the way to go. So about this subject.
Thank you very much. Would you like to continue?
Yeah, your question was that about how we can use free software to keep allow cooperatives to use it, but disallow companies or corporations to use it.
Or single persons, I guess.
Yes. Oh, well, I think the answer is we cannot. I mean, we cannot with free software. And if there are companies who are doing certain things that we consider to be bad, we have to stop them doing it. But writing a piece of software and disallowing them to use it for their purposes is not the way to go, right? It's like creating a pen and allowing everyone to do whatever they want to do with it, except signing a war treaty. If I decide to produce a pen, then I must allow my users to write whatever they want. I cannot. We would stretch copyright, right? The whole idea of free software is based on copyright, because when I create a piece of software, it's up to me to decide who can copy it, who can give it away, who can use it. But it would be rather strange to try and decide how the software can be used, because that would be like writing a book and saying you can use that information that I wrote into that book for anything except going to war. That's just not possible, right? If we decide to write free software, then the first strict principle that we have to stick to is freedom of use, and it is not our responsibility what people are using the software for.
Thank you very much. So, do you also want to react to the questions or?
Yeah, maybe diversity. Just the question on the diversity very quickly. I mean, diversity is an issue that I think is very deeply rooted in society, and there are reasons why maybe more male people are becoming coders, and I think it's actually changing. I mean, we've been talking about it, I think, in the main panel yesterday night. Also, they mentioned that. Well, still, I think like businesses like ours, cooperatives like ours, we can do our efforts to try to diversify our team. And we did, but it also depends on, do we have the resources to actually do it? Or are we depending on whoever comes and wants to join us? And we certainly don't exclude someone who says, I want to join you guys. And we don't say, okay, you're male, white, please go out. You know, like that we can't do. But we can try to encourage, and I think, yeah, we did try that.
Yeah, I think it's very similar with us, because in our local meetings, I mean, if 15 people show up and two of them are women, that's a lot already. And we have a problem there. I don't have an answer to that. The only answer that I can think of is that the solution to that problem is probably with us men, in terms of the gender question, with us men. It's our responsibility to create a atmosphere and situation that more women want to join us. And it's not as easy as just saying, well, we are looking at our group and the women are just not coming. So this is my, what is appel in English? This is my call to all the white men out there. Please create a situation and an atmosphere that more women and/or a more diverse group of people feels comfortable. I think we're opening up a second panel,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we are. So this already sounded like a nice final statement. However, I would like to give the chance to every one of you to say two final sentences about your key takeaways from the panel, if you want to. It's voluntarily. And I would like to maybe start over there if there's...
Okay, so... As said, I think this is a very pressing issue. I think we need to focus our resources to actually create pilot projects that are visible and attracting mainstream, and then also have the capacities and resources to be more inclusive and attract more people that maybe are more dependent on actually getting a well-paid job, like just people who are now marginalized and don't have much money and just need a job and maybe can't volunteer. Then the learning for me is that I'm still more supportive of the free software approach, and I do think that we have to collaborate more. And this is a general thing. There's not enough corporations in all of these scenes and movements that are out there. I think we're much too focused on our own silos. So this is actually also a call. Let's join together, let's join our forces. With Famondo, certainly we need partners, we also need more activists helping us. Right now we urgently need people, so anyone who's interested, just contact me, felix@famondo.de. And also, whatever you do, let's work together. Let's try to make it big. Thanks.
Thank you very much. So, two last sentences?
Yes. Well, what I would say is like, So software has been eating the world for a few years already, and the world was pronounced around here. We are in the era of platform capitalism. So, in face of climate change, I believe that platform cooperative can make a difference, because they can focus on something else than profit. So they can focus on maybe ecological issues. Way more than profit-oriented companies, and we will discuss later because I fairly believe that what we are doing in a philosophical way is really more near of open source to free software than to open source. Because I really prefer Richard Stallman than to Eric Raymond, and we have to adapt to our epoch, to our era, and maybe what was answered at a certain time are not adapted today. So maybe. It's not the four principles of free software are not a law edicted by God. So so that's just my opinion.
Okay, thank you very much. And also your final statement?
Yeah, well, yeah, as free software advocates, we always have to live with the situation that the bad guys don't know us, right? And they don't know what free software is all about. And that's a hard situation. But here in the context of Bits and Bäume, we found that sometimes even the good guys don't know us. And so I want to thank you for the opportunity. I love to be here, and I think that more of the good guys should use more free software. Thanks.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for coming.